Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by MC Foucault.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I am really well. I just played a show last night at the Elbow Room.
Yeah.
And another one on Friday at No Nation. And that was for the Sick Muse release show. And that was like crazy good.
I was going to say, you're like super busy.
Yes. Yes. And without getting too far into it, I'm also putting on a show Friday at Pile of Teeth, which I was talking about last night with Daniel.
Yeah.
We're having Jesus and Friends, Mohawk Johnson, Pradia, and Stoner Jake. So that's the last thing I have going on this month. It's on the 29th. So, you know, I definitely am trying to stay busy going to as many shows and performing as much as I can, as well. I feel like if I'm not working or hanging out with friends, I should be doing something. And that's sort of like where I'm at right now.
Yeah, that is a big, like, that's something that I really desperately need to get better at. Like, I just, like, I don't know what it is. I'm just such a, I wonder if this is surprising, but I'm very introverted. Like, as much as I have a podcast that has 20 episodes and meet a lot of people, like, it is so hard for me to leave the house if I don't have to, and it's terrible, especially because I think that's what I think has made, like, makes such a strong and thriving, like, music scene and local music scene and, like, underground music scene, is that there's just such a strong, like, seeing each other's shit thing.
Yeah, and I think that that's, I kind of think about it, I'm, as much as I, try to be out doing as much as I can, I try to frame it in a similar fashion. Like, I don't want to go to something that I am in no way invested in, right? Mm-hmm. And that means, like, becoming invested in my friend's art and things right. that are going on. Like, you could go to a show every single night in Chicago if you wanted to, but, like, if they're not bands that are doing things you care about or saying things you care about, then, like, you're kind of just, like, wasting time. At that point, it's a better use of money to, like, buy yourself a nice dinner and listen to the music you already like, mm-hmm. right? So, for me, going to shows as a performer is, I kind of look at it as a little bit of it's like working. Like, I try and take photos. I do a lot of photography. And
you're a fantastic photographer.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I just started, doing it, I guess, professionally. I've been taking show photos for about 4 years now using borrowed cameras. And this past Christmas, my parents gave me a, like, entry-level Canon Rebel. And cool. So I've kind of just took as many pictures as I could, built up a portfolio, and a couple of the things that I've gone to this month, I've actually been paid to go, you know, take photos. And so those came from me going to other shows and taking pictures for free, right? So, like, if I can, you know, photograph or network and talk with bookers, talk with bands about the stuff I do, then for me that feels like, oh, I'm working a little bit, right? And so, like, it has that, like, I'm doing this because it is going to further my connections in the scene as well as, like, build a community. It like I said, it's about, like, finding things to invest yourself into and then, like, following up with that, right?
Well, this is really, like, interesting and thoughtful conversation for us, because a lot of things we keep kind of talking about is figuring out how communities can, like, develop on their own rather than be developed by others. I think we actually touched on this.
Yeah, definitely.
For a Pile of Teeth. But I think that's such an interesting, like, thought, because, like, that's, I think, one of the ways that we're going to see a really vibrant, like, DIY scene in a way that, the other kind of piece that I'm balancing with this with is one of the things that I think we mentioned this. So the show we did with What About Chicago is coming out on Friday, I think. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I mentioned there and I'll mention now is that I don't think this was on air when we had them on, but I was talking with Ben Maroney, and one of the things that we were talking about was, this was on air, was the idea of, like, what somehow the question was like, what do you listen to, or like what kind of, I don't know what it was, but he was just like, I only listen to Chicago music, like, period. Like, that's just like, I've listened to a lot of Chicago music for a while, but like it kind of dawned on me in that moment, and like I've since kind of talked with a couple other people and been like, you can do that.
Yeah,
like, you, that's like, it's absolutely, it's not hard. The music that's being made here is like on that level, and like to kind of like that, how that kind of ties into me with this is like, in so many ways, like seeing people come out of the community and be like, I'm learning how to do photography. Mm-hmm. I want to do journalism. Like seeing how What About Chicago came out of the community, and seeing how instilling these things that like maybe may seem like traditional journalist practices, like radio shows, like photography, like things that to come out of the community directly, I think is really powerful. And like, I
think that the intention behind it, because it comes out of the community, is different. I think that if an established photographer were to go to a show and be like, cool, I'm going to take pictures of your show and I'll pay me, is different than a member of the community going in and being, you know, and accepting payment. Yeah. And being like, hey, like, I've known this person for 3 years, like, you know, I want to make sure that I get a good picture of that person that captures them.
Yeah.
It's an entirely different thing. It's still show photography, but it comes from a more compassionate place.
Yeah. I think I have an example from the Sick Muse show, which I also did photography at, and that was like way harder than I thought it was going to be, like taking pictures, because I've had shows where I took pictures and took pictures of everyone except me, because I was playing or right, whatever, right. But for that show I did like a 12 song set that was about, they were like, you have 30 minutes, and I was like, well, it's going to be the first 30 minutes I'm ever performing in front of 95% of the people here. I want to try and be as impressive as I can. So I was like, let's just do 12 songs using my DJ app. I created like a mix that they would all just run one into the other.
Nice.
And just kind of went for 30 minutes straight. I think I timed it about 4.5 of those minutes I wasn't rapping. They were like instrumental breaks or choruses or whatever. So yeah, the rest of that time I was just going. And since I was first, like, it kind of took me a good, like, 15 minutes before I, like, recovered enough to walk around and take pictures, right? So I had gotten some good pictures beforehand, but after that, like, once I got, back on my feet and I was ready to go, I just took as many pictures as I could, hoping to get good shots of everyone. And as I was editing it, like, I maybe had, out of 300 shots, like, 20 that were, like, not focus or like weren't a good frame or didn't show the person in a good light. And I was just like thinking about that percentage of like just shots that are on was like, whoa, this is really cool. And it, and like you said, it comes from like most of the pictures were pictures of my friends or bands I really like, so all of that came through in the photography. And I think it's we touched on it earlier or on the last podcast, but like art has value and all art has value. And I think that that's something that like at the Sick Muse, when Noah contacted me about doing it, he was like, hey, our normal photographer had to drop off. Would you mind doing this? And can we pay you to do it? And I was just like flattered, one, because, just their magazine, they post so much good photography, and they're like, I feel like it to be asked to take pictures of their event is like, okay, this, I know I'm at a certain caliber, as far as this goes. But it was just really cool. Everybody who performed that night got paid, everybody who did work on it got paid, and it's really heartening to see that community building by like giving value to, yeah, to the performers.
Well, it's especially hard, and this is something that I'm, I feel like I've been, like, parsing out personally for the last few years, just kind of, like, as my politics has become more radical, but, like, seeing it in a, like, a physical manifestation like that. Like, I think so many of us want to believe that, like, oh, you don't need money, but, like, you do. Like,
yeah.
Like, and it's weird to see, like, I don't know. It's just, it's an interesting...
It's cool to know that, you know, that the Chicago DIY scene at like, you know, at a higher level of operation is, like, really prioritizing, like, hey, like, these people really put in time and effort and, you know, this is their, these are, you know, this is their lives, this is their livelihood. Like, we need to make sure that they're compensated for their time and effort. Like, because, I mean, I know that that's a model that we're very passionate about. It's like, you know, we're not taking any steps forward until we can guarantee pay the people necessary to take those steps.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what you have to do. And it's hard, but it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was actually thinking about this a lot. This is sort of, I don't mean to change the subject, but, for my next album that's coming out in August, my goal is to have 8 tracks, have 4 of them that I produce and made and rapped on, and then 4 that friends of mine produce and are rapped on. And this, I kind of did something similar. Last year's mixtape was, it was called Mask Off, and like masculine rather than like with a K, but had a lot to do with various things having to do with gender and also like masks that we wear. It's like thematically it was tied kind of into the EP that I recorded with Endolphins, that, you know, touched on a lot of like Nietzsche type philosophy stuff, and Nietzsche's a big proponent of talking about masks and the way we interact with ourselves as well as society. But on Mask Off, I used like 4 tracks that my friend Fred Thomas had made, and he's also just like my favorite songwriter ever. So he fronted the band Saturday Looks Good to Me and a ton of other amazing bands, but he just kind of one day posted on Facebook, he made a beat. He was like, I've wanted to do this for a really long time, but never really knew how to. But this is the first beat I made. If someone wants to rap on it, that would be great. And it was a Joanna Newsom track that like he had made like kind of like trap beat out of. And I was like immediately like wrote something, recorded something that day and sent it to him. And he was like, this is awesome. Feel free to use this, whatever. And so on. And for my record, I ended up using 4 different beats that he made for various projects and stuff. And I was like, hey, probably not going to make any money off of this, but like whatever I do, I can send it to you first. And he was like, no, this is a gift. Like, I appreciate how much you like my music and stuff. So it was really cool for him to like offer that as a gift to me. And I got to put those songs on my record. Yeah. But this year, doing this and wanting to use like 4 tracks from friends of mine, like, you know, I'm saying like I'm paying X amount of money per beat and then like a percentage of royalties, you know, splitting it with whoever makes the beats. Mm-hmm. And that for me feels like feels really good because it's like I can show that like I am investing in my friend's art to like further my art as well. And I guess just for a rundown of that, Daniel is making a track. My friend Devin, whose project is called Pink Navel, they actually just played at Subterranean last Wednesday. It was so good. They made a beat that I'm using for it, and they're from Boston. My friend John, who goes under the name Star Luminaire, made a beat actually out of a music from the game Chrono Trigger, which is a really rad Super Nintendo game.
Yeah.
And Petey from Blackerface and Company Colony, a million other bands. Petey's going to be producing one of the tracks for it. So I'm really excited about it. Daniel and Petey's are the only ones I don't have yet and have written for. And then I think for the tracks that I made that are going to be on it, there's probably also like 2 that are like uncompleted. But I'm hoping, not hoping, the album's coming out August 18th. And it's like, a lot of 8 imagery. I don't know why. It just felt like the right time to say, here's a deadline, do it. And once I said August, I was like, 18th, because it's the 18th year. And so a lot of like numerology stuff.
I don't know what it is about this year, but like so many people I know are kind of like really tapping into this like metaphysical space, and like it's just so interesting. I just have so many questions for you.
I'm sure. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to first just kind of like clarify. So like how much of on your past work have you done your own production?
So the first record I made was like almost entirely sample based. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're taking something, chopping it up and reusing it, that's still production. That's still, I would still be happy calling that my own. Mm-hmm. There was one track that I did that was just like a sped up version of a Stars song. Mm-hmm. And there was one track that I did, it's called Pints. That was sort of like, I took the hook from my friend's song, which was like, just, you know, a party song about drinking. And like, I sort of made it into like a more like poppy chorus. Mm-hmm. And the beat from that, I actually made with my buddy Sean Bennett from the band AJJ. Mm-hmm. We sort of like, our first time making music together, he was like, let's play things that we don't normally play. So like he played piano and did some drum programming, and I did some weird other like noise and instrument type stuff on it. And so then we made this like kind of loop or whatever, and I made it into a rap song that also had the hook from my friend's thing on it. But so that first album was 90% stuff I made or produced. The second one was a little closer to like 60-40 stuff. Sure. I produced. The Endolphins EP was like totally collaborative, but I still feel like, you know, my input went into everything as well. And then Praxis, the EP I put out back in February or March, that one was entirely things I had produced this year. That was like kind of, I set a goal for myself to make like a beat a month in January. And I did the first one and was like super proud of it. And then like a couple days later, I had another idea in my head, and they kind of just snowballed into 5 songs out of nowhere. And I was like, okay, I need to record these right now.
Yeah. Is that, let's touch on that real quick. Was that the kind of thinking of like that album? Cause that was one of the albums that I listened to. And like, I just love Theory. So like when I saw the word Praxis, and then to hear you kind of talk about that process, was that kind of like a piece of where that comes from? Or
yes, exactly. I should correct myself. One of the beats, the first one, the title song Praxis, was a very early electronic piece I made using an app that I can no longer use, and I'm really bummed about, but it's called Nano Studio, and I recorded it on my old iPad, and it has like acoustic guitar in it and some other kind of like weird things. But I made that in like 2012 and couldn't ever write any like vocals to it or whatever. At the time, I didn't think I would ever rap or do anything like that. So it's like, it's just something that had been with me forever and ever and ever. And then I was like, oh, let's start writing to this and let's start doing something with this. I was like, I'm good enough now to write to weird beats. I had already recorded that stuff with Endolphins, and you know, I had a lot of confidence in it. But the reason I called it Praxis and that whole EP is called Praxis is because for most of my life, I've like lived in like theory land, right? Like since I was a very young kid, I thought about the ways in which we construct our reality and the ways in which we think about things. That's where I lived. I read and focused on stuff that was that. Like Isaac Asimov is a huge influence on me, and like his talk about like psychohistory and stuff like that. This is all theory, right? This is all things like different like theories about stuff. And then like Foucault, and the reason I chose the name Foucault was like, well, if we change the way we think about stuff, we have to also change how we do and interact those theories and everything. So that was like, that's where the praxis came in. It was just like taking all of those ideas and starting to like do things with intention and with like structured thinking.
No, I think that in a lot of ways, like, we find ourselves in an era where, like, praxis, the concept of it, is something that we really need to consider. Like, it's just so much, like, we are finding more and more that, like, actually putting that nose to the grindstone and, like actualizing. Because I think that a lot of people that we know came up in education of some sort. And so the idea of how a lot of, you know, and I always kind of, I think more and more about kind of, like, culture and arts and music and, you know, history that that has happened in the last few decades, so much of it sometimes feels like there's just like little nuggets of like, oh, I hope this comes to fruition, you know. Like, in a lot of ways, I feel like we, like, this generation is the, like, let's execute, you know. And I think that's such a, that was such a cool little nugget to see in your in your discography, I guess.
Yeah,
I want to also kind of, do you have, before I like kind of keep tearing in here.
No, just the Isaac Asimov thing. We've actually, you are our second guest to be inspired by Isaac Asimov. The other one was, we interviewed my first ever friend. He grew up across the street from me, and he writes epic poems that are based on the philosophies of Isaac Asimov.
Oh, that's
which
so
is
dope.
Fucking cool. Yes. He ended up like kind of dubbing his the piece that we were talking to him about. He called it he dubs it the Mushroom Bible. Yeah, but you know, that is
like 150 episodes ago.
Really, really old.
We have like
cool. I will go through the archives.
Yeah,
to find
it's
it.
With
definitely
Alex Skanavis. Is our guy.
I can't guarantee you good audio quality on that one.
Oh, no, that's
it
fine.
It might not be terrible. Yeah.
What all I'm hoping for are sampleable moments.
Genuinely.
You, if that happens, I will die.
Well, that kind of brings you in, like, to something that we were talking about before
absolutely.
The show.
Yeah.
Well, and I think this also, like, very, very much what we've been talking about transitions really well into this, you know, well, we've been talking a lot about, like, production and sampling, and I don't know if everybody that is listening, that listens to our podcast entirely understands all that, but I think they do at this point now that we've kind of contextualized it. One of the things that I find so remarkable about your work is, well, and I noted this when we were talking to you about A Pile of Teeth, but this just kind of shows it even more, is just your versatility and your flexibility and your willingness to kind of like pull from making sure that the influences that you're pulling from are the ones that you want to be pulling from, you know. And I also think it's super interesting, like, you know, a lot of your tracks, like a couple of them are like Mabimbam pulls, like, and
yes,
like
absolutely.
Very solid. And you know, we were talking about you know, one of the things I was really curious about hearing it was like how many people recognize, because like Mabimbam is slowly inching towards mainstream, but like
I would say it's as mainstream as something like Overwatch or
right.
Call of Duty, like
Fortnite.
Any sort of like niche game has as many fans as My Brother and Me, right?
Yeah.
Any sort of like niche comedy, niche, you know what I mean? They're not the number one comedy podcast by any means, but like they have a following that's as big as where a lot of comedy podcasts were like 4 or 5 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So it's for me. You know, I started listening a few years ago when a friend of mine introduced me to, I think, Monster Factory, right? Was the first, like, McElroy thing that I got into. And, you know, I do have one song that's basically just a Monster Factory rap.
Just like Bart, right?
Yeah, like Bart from Mask Off. And, yeah, the, like, second verse of that is like 40 or so references to different characters or things happening on that series.
Yeah.
And it's so funny to me. That's sort of like why I want to reference it, rather than like, oh, it's cool or neat or I feel like I'm on the inside. It's just like, man, these hit so hard that like if I put it in one of my songs, like, and someone else also has seen those, like, they're gonna laugh. Like, they're not gonna be able to not laugh, right? And that's sort of like my original idea with like sampling things like My Brother and Me. It's because it's like, it's so good, right? Yeah. And I think I don't like, there's always a danger when I write and like want to say as many things as I can, and if you just reference, like if every single thing you say is a reference to something else and doesn't have any narrative to it, then people are just like, you know, it's like reading the dictionary, mm-hmm. right? Like, okay, yeah, you can impress yourself with how many things you know, but like there's nothing fulfilling to it, right? So I kind of like draw influences from so many different things just because like I feel like they are different ways of like expressing a feeling or telling a story, right? And that's where, you know, the reason I choose the references I do, the song Shrimp Heaven Now, which is another one that's like, I'm not going to say stop listening to the podcast, but if you don't know what Shrimp Heaven Now is, just Google it and
pause,
yes,
find it, and then come back.
Yes, yeah. After laughing for like 10 minutes, it'll be great. Trust me. But, you know, that already, like the hook of that song, like that's going to get people.
Sorry, I don't mean to
cut. No, go ahead.
Hearing it, because I caught the live stream of your live show, and hearing it live here, I was like, that is a perfect hook. Like, yeah. I was just so impressed by that. I was like, wow, I just did not expect that to be so good.
Well, we were at our friend's house yesterday, and me and our friend Joaquin were making food in the kitchen, and Daniel was in the living room, and I was like, what the hell? I was like, I know what he's listening to, but I can't, out of context, I can't place it. Then I was like, oh my God, that's like the Crystal Kingdom
theme
from Adventure Zone. And mm-hmm. I go, I'm like, are you listening to the Adventure Zone? He's like, no, MC Foucault. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? He just kind of like holds his phone up in disbelief.
And then just like drops the mic. Yeah.
Yeah, last year, Big Boy put out a song called Kill Bill that used some like Japanese like Vocaloid type things and sort of like put a trap beat to it, and it was just like, it was really, really good. The production on it was phenomenal. And I was like, I kind of want to do something like this, but rather than just have it be a similar, like, chopping something up and putting a trap beat on it, I was like, well, what if I took, like, my favorite piece of, like, Vocaloid music, which it was, you know, the theme, the Crystal Kingdom theme, and I was like, I kind of want to make it dynamic, so... the first time through, it's like one of the songs, right? The second time through, it's the second song. There's a total of four of songs. And so after the four songs play, they start adding up on top of each other. And this is something that, like, I don't think anyone has ever, like, caught while listening to it. But, like, by the last time through the song, you're hearing all four of the songs going at the same time. Two are on the left side and two are on the right side. And... just how Griffin made those songs with them overlapping, they turn into these really cool harmonies and everything like that. So it was like, I sort of like jumped at the chance to do that. And since I had already had that beat and it was like, this is a McElroy thing, I was like, well, why don't I write about some McElroy stuff? And that's where the second verse being like Monster Factory came into play. But yes, I guess I do want to get back to like the references thing.
Yeah.
Part of why I use the references I do, like I jokingly refer to myself as like a meme rapper, What I love about that is, like, the word meme has, like, a now cultural context, right? Mm-hmm. And it has a context that was used by Richard Dawkins, who's a terrible person, but, like, nonetheless, like, he a lot of times likes to say that he invented that word. He didn't. It was a like cultural anthropological word from like the 50s and 60s that he then used. But it's this idea that like there are things that we can express that have way more impact than the things that they are made of. Right. And so when I'm doing references and memes and things like that, it's like I want to say and do more, but I want it to be a part of, again, this cohesive narrative. But for someone listening at home, if they hear a reference to this like thing that them and maybe a million other people in the world might get, it mm-hmm. feels really special. It feels like, oh, part of this was for me, right? So when I do a show, like I'm hoping that everyone in the audience will catch some reference to something that they really like that is special to them.
Well, and even if they don't, like, these things are still very, like, the reason why I wanted to contextualize with this with kind of like your production background is because these are not, that's not a hard marriage to, I mean, it is, to me, it was shocking at first, but then I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Like, it makes, because so much of production and, like, the history of production is sampling, and not just sampling, but, like, referencing things culturally and sonically, and you may not even catch a, like, you know, I'm thinking of, sorry for bringing up him up, but, like, early Kanye. Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely. Because,
like, where so much of it is, like, there's just such a deep pull to the things that he's sampling from, and a lot of people probably don't even catch that level of it, but like it's still like it now exists in a completely different way. I just think it's so, I don't entirely have a question, but I just think that's such an interesting kind of like that trajectory of going from recognizing it now, it's a natural progression to me.
Yeah, and that's sort of like when I say like I'm a meme rapper, and I mean it kind of jokingly, rap in its entire history has been about references. Mm-hmm. References to different things. When they were the very first rappers were rapping on disco beats that DJs like cut up and chopped up into things that you could just keep going and going and going. And that's why like the early rap songs were like 10, 11 minutes long. And they were kind of silly, kind of just like playing with a few different rhymes and like just like how long can you keep this flow going? But it was always a reference to something else. Even if you listen to the things they're talking about, they're listing specific cultural items that are to resonate with their audience, right? The people there dancing at the show, other people would listen to that record and not have any idea what like half of these things were talking about. But for everybody in the crowd, they all knew, it all rang out with them. And so while I say like, I'm a meme rapper and that's a, you know, kind of joke, it's like all the best rappers have made references to the things in their past. And the best rappers are able to use those past influences and past things to build something that no one has heard yet, right? And then sort of like that progression kind of keeps going through that. And I think Kanye is a really good example of that because when he came on the scene, that was all he did, right? It was all these like soul tracks that were sped up and stuff. But like while that was all he did, no one else could do anything near that. It took at least 5 or 6 years before anybody made a beat that was like, oh, that sounds like Kanye, but it's not garbage, right?
Well, it wasn't like apparent to a lot of people that that's what he, I mean, I think obviously for some people it was, and I think obviously the people that were around him knew, but you know what I mean? Like it, like, I don't know.
So in terms of your references, like, I think it's really cool, the pulling from podcasting.
Yeah.
Specifically because, like, you know, on a lot of beats, on a lot of, you know, in a lot of sampling, like, there have always been pulls from, like, old radio, old TV, you know, stuff like that. And on it, to me, it seems like the natural progression of like kind of the next step of media pulls.
Yeah.
But it's strange to me that no one has, because like, I don't really think anyone's sampling podcasts right now.
Yeah, I think it's part of it has to do with like podcasts. While they are very prolific and there are so many of them, I think most people think of like a podcast from a year ago as completely irrelevant, right? Because it's not, because it's a media that's like regularly produced and like no one's going to find a paper from a year ago and read it, right? Like it's old news, right? So I think a lot of people's mindsets about podcasts are like the old episodes, those are old news. But I think, I feel like that's like so dismissive and doesn't really recognize that like a lot of podcasts, you can go, if they're good podcasts, then like you can see that back when they didn't have good sound quality, back when like they didn't have a format or a formula they were following. Like the best podcasts will just be good and enjoyable to listen to. I think back to like a lot of like Magic the Gathering podcasts. That was really like my first foray into listening to podcasts, various Magic the Gathering podcasts, and like all my favorite ones are ones that like have a timeless nature to them because they're talking about the game, or a lot of them talking like when they step away from talking about the game and talk about more like who you are as a person who like does things, like, you know, talking about morality of trading things and like ripping people off or providing good deals, like those kind of things. Like, I think podcasts have just so much untapped ground, but the problem is like you only have so much time that you can listen. Right. So everybody wants to spend their time listening to something that's relevant to them right now. And like, I feel like if I had infinite time, then like I would devote a certain percentage of that to just listening to like old podcasts that I like and just like learning how they got to where they were. I still haven't listened through all of My Brother and Me. And I'm like 3/4 of the way through the first Adventure Zone arc. So like,
we just finished the first Adventure
Zone. It's a really good. My god.
Yeah, but it took a while.
Yeah, it took a really long time
because you know you want to make sure that you really pay it. Yeah,
you absorb it.
Yeah. So I have more thoughts on this, and we can touch on them. But I want to also ask about the philosophy aspect of all of this. Yes. Like, you have a deep like history with philosophy. Like, because that kind of all the things that we've talked about, that's a whole other spectrum of like where does that come from for you?
For me, it definitely comes from when I was young reading so much Asimov, like these like huge stories that span like, you know, like there are a lot of trilogies in Asimov stuff, and I was a really big fan of like reading as much as I could as a kid. And every time I would try to read an author that wasn't Asimov, I would be reminded of like how much I liked Isaac Asimov, and there was always new books of his to find. So I would like read one book by someone else and then read like 4 by Asimov. And like, what I found is that he wrote in a way like, and he talks about, he spent a lot of time like explaining his stories and writing them. I'd read a lot of short stories, and like my favorite parts of all of his short stories were like the couple paragraphs before where he talked about his life and the context of it. And so in all of these stories, in order to make it interesting, he had to have characters that had different philosophies and different understandings of how the way the world works. So as I learned more in school about anthropology, about things like that, sociology, I started to try and understand people at a philosophical level.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like, oh, which philosophers have the best idea of how people work, but just individuals, right? Like if you're empathizing with someone, like to try to understand where they're coming from and why they think about things the way they do, right? And so that framework is all, in my opinion, like that's what philosophers have spent history doing, is trying to understand that. since I moved to Chicago, and I met my spouse, Simon, they have been a huge influence on like talking about philosophy. That was like one of the things, like the first night we met, was a show that I was playing with Endolphins, here in Chicago. I didn't live here, but it was like a Labor Day show last year. And we spent almost the entire night talking about Foucault and other philosophers and the postmodernism, all this stuff. And, so a lot of my current like takes on philosophy or whatever, or just not necessarily takes, but like philosophers that I tend to like side with and things like that come from discussions with them, with Simon, about it. And as I was saying, like for me, the focus on philosophy is just like understanding people and the way they think. I still think my favorite, like, one of my favorite things is like Plato talking about Socrates and what is good, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that that discussion is something that like we don't think about enough. Too often we have an idea of what right and wrong is, what good and bad is. And if someone does something that doesn't fall in line with our moral compass, we assign it bad, and if it is, then it's good. But those actions will almost always have different reactions and different influences on people and affect people in different ways. And if we're not taking the time to think about how those actions affect others, then I think we're doing a disservice by calling things good or bad or whatever. So like ultimately all of the stuff with philosophy is like to understand how we think about the world. And
but I also think like, again, like to this idea of like where these genres, no, thought,
schools of thought, maybe?
Sure, yeah, where it's another like a marriage that makes a lot of sense to me. Like I think that in a lot of ways what some people turn to philosophy for are what other people turn to like hip-hop for, or what other people turn to podcasts for. Like it's like it's such a like these schools are so things that you wouldn't. So I guess all of this is to say, because I think this is kind of where I'm going next, is like for you, what kind of is the confidence is not the right word, but driving force maybe behind, I think you know what I'm saying more than I'm actually saying, like where do you feel like how do you this is always happens to me with talking about multidisciplinary.
No, that's
where it's just like I get lost in jargon. Like what, how fucking shit, what is the like pencil with which you draw between these genres, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I feel like what they do and what the different taking things from, you know, musical genres, hip-hop, whatever, like I feel like most of my thought comes from like, you know, growing up like in punk rock and thinking mm-hmm. about that as like a mindset, like in terms of like equality and you know, I'm an anarchist, which is, you know, that informs all of everything I do. But taking various schools of philosophy, taking all those genres, I think the connecting piece between them is they all have to do with the way you see the world and the yeah. way you interact with it, right? And like, again, the difference between theory and, you know, praxis is how you now I'm losing the word, how you like corporealize that, right? How you put it into like a physical space, and taking thoughts and putting them into physical space is very tough. That's why philosophy exists as a school of study. And I think like ultimately like it's one of the like worst things you can study, because when you focus on just thinking about how you think, what's the point, right? If you're not applying that to...
I love how this is like just the philosophizing on praxis, like on just the... Because, and I, this is something that we do so much on the show, because what we end up talking with a lot of people about is structures and formats. And those were the words I was trying to think of before.
Yes.
Like how, but also because, you know, I find in a lot of ways, like in the world we're living in right now, like there is a giant, I mean, in some ways, I think this is why... I mean, stupidly, I think that America elected Trump is because there was like this desire for ripping down the system and anarchy. And I think in the same way, that was a lot of the popularity of Bernie Sanders. And I think that these things are like, that is a, there's a degree of this, but then there's also like a recognition, you know, I think people with artistic mindsets, you know, especially like we've mentioned this so many times on the show, but we come from opera, and so that's like there is not more a more structured or formatted form than that.
Yeah.
And but you know, to come from that and recognize that how much like tradition and format can do, and then to come to that and be like, well, in some ways, like I wish the lyric would start from scratch, you know, like I've said this before, like, and I don't think anyone that cares that is listening to, anyway,
you keep just saying the lyric, the Chicago Lyric Opera.
Yes.
Like, oh,
yes,
yeah. Sorry.
Like, anyway.
Oh, I was actually, that's almost worse, because my thinking was to not say something like, I hope the lyric burns, but like, anyway.
Oh man. I think it's just it becomes necessary to, like, one of the reasons I love rap and I love hip hop in general is that so much thought can be spent on what you're presenting and how you're presenting it, mm-hmm. the format as it were. But like what happens is like every so often, like someone like will put out a track that is just like transcendent, and it doesn't follow any of the formula rules, and it doesn't, you know, like I'm thinking a couple years ago, maybe even 3 years ago now, but You Guessed It was a song, and it was just like, it was so good, and it was like, it had kind of taken like mumble rap and like everybody's ideas about like negative ideas about this is an art form that takes no talent. This is just people like mumbling into a microphone on drugs. And it was like, well, what if I use that formula and just like make it even more nonsensical, like the most you could possibly have, like ridiculous you could have something. And all of a sudden, like, you couldn't go to a party, like a cool party, where people weren't dancing to that song. Like anywhere in the country you went, like the cool parties were playing that song. And it's just like, while we can get lost in the way everything's framed and the structures and everything, I think the best art is able to recognize those structures and go above them, right? Mm. And that's all I'm trying to do. I don't know that I've ever had a moment that I feel is like, oh wow, this like gets past, you know, this transcends the art form or whatever. But like, you know, there are moments at my shows where people are singing Shrimp Heaven Now, and I just like make a loop on the hook, and like we sing it through like three or four times, and like I didn't know that I would ever get to that point, right, where like 60 or some people would be shouting along with me to like a really, really, really silly hook that I wrote that like took the punchline from a question sent into a podcast, right? Like this, when I think about sampling that, it's not like, yeah, sure, the guys in Mamid Bam are the ones who said it, but like that was written by someone who literally watched this event happen and then sent it into a comedy podcast. Like, or they made it up, whatever the case is. Like, this was like someone's experience that then gets to be experienced by like millions of people And then, like, I can take that and use it into a thing where, like, all of a sudden me and all my friends and all these cool people in a place are, like, singing along to it. Like, mm-hmm. like that for me is, like, my, like, transcendent moment that I get to have.
It's like a modern-day anonymous poem, you know?
Yeah.
like, yep. There in classical music, there are all these, like, you know, there are... You know, there are a couple classifications of song. If it's an aria, that means it's from an opera. If it's an art song, it means it just kind of stands on its own. Mm-hmm. And there are a bunch of art songs that are just like poems written by anonymous. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like your Shrimp Heaven Now is the modern day, like, you know, Schubert lead written by anonymous, which yeah. is the fucking best thing in the world.
Yeah.
There is nothing better than that.
So the time has absolutely flown by. I want to talk. So we're going to have you back on to talk more about the album, specifically the upcoming album.
Yeah. I would love to come maybe sometime in August, come back and talk about it. Cause then yeah. I'll know yeah. everything that's on it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
But do keep an eye out. If you're listening, I highly recommend, we'll do plugs, but I also just want to say, like, highly recommend checking out your work. It's really fantastic and fun and good. But so yeah, the last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1 minute plug for anything they have upcoming. Sometimes it's very obvious, like letting people know about upcoming shows that you're producing and performing in, or where they can find your music. Otherwise, we love hearing about other folk shout out. We love hearing shout outs to other folks you think that are doing dope work, or any media you're consuming, self-care or otherwise, music, TV shows, movies, podcasts, things like that.
Yeah, I definitely want to tell people go check out the latest issue of Sick Muse. It's really mm-hmm. great. I am putting on a show on Friday at A Pile of Teeth. We now have a Facebook group and that kind of thing. So if you search for A Pile of Teeth, you can find it. I am looking to do more shows in July. There might be two shows at A Pile of Teeth in July. There's already one book. There might be a second one. So again, stay on top of that. I definitely think you can spend a lot of time listening to Chicago music. So I would just check out other Chicago bands. Like, again, I'm shout out Blackerface and Dolphins. They put out records, you know, within the past couple months that I still listen to daily, and they're so good. So like, that's, I guess, what I want to say for people to check out.
Cool. And about on Sick Muse, we're actually going to have them on the podcast. They're coming here tonight, but the podcast, if for people listening to it, it will be tomorrow for you, whatever day you're listening to it, whenever this comes out. This is either coming out, so you're either listening to this on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, and if that whatever time that is that you're hearing this now and going, that's that time, 24 hours from then, the Sick Muse episode will be out.
Dope. I'm really excited to
yeah
hear
we're
that.
Also very excited, just because I love getting more into kind of like digital media publishing, and not just digital media, obviously, because that's, but you know what I mean, just kind of like publishing in this era is really, really interesting, and different formats of that and all that stuff. Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Dayan Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scopymag.com. That's our website. We post all of our articles there, as well as all of our podcast episodes. The most recent publication on there is article that I wrote last night from the...
Untrue. The most recent is a interview with the owner operators of the shithole. So check that out.
Nice.
What was the one last night, though?
Have you heard of Shmeal?
No.
It's a meal app.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. You can buy a $6 meal from a local person at their apartment.
Yeah, it's like the Uber of meal sharing apps. Well, not really, because it's not terrible.
Wow. All right. This is a lot to process. Shots I'll check fired. Out the article.
Shmeal's really cool. We had the founders on. The whole idea is that you can... It's Chicago only. It's iPhone only, which sucks. But, I mean, it's fine. I'm not trying to shit talk Shmeal. I think they're great. But the premise is that, yeah, if you're a home cook, they come and just kind of like look at your apartment at all and just make sure that it's not, you know, I don't know, a poison den. Yeah.
A poison den.
Yeah. And then you cook the meals and then you post them on their app and then people can buy them for $6 a meal.
Whoa.
And you make $5.50 a bowl.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's really cool. I'm definitely interested in checking that out. That would encourage me to cook better every night, because that's my thing. I have a really hard time cooking for just myself.
Sure.
And sometimes like I'll want to make something that my spouse doesn't like, but like I'm just like, I'm not going to make that if I'm the only one eating it.
Yeah.
But like I love cooking using all of my ingredients, and then like either I have leftovers or someone buys it for $6. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Cool.
So I'll definitely check that out.
Do check it out. Yeah, that was really great. And I was the interview. It was cool listening. It's always interesting listening back to podcast episodes to write articles about it, because it's fun. The podcast episode itself actually was pretty fun too. I remember we were like weirdly nervous about it. Cool. Find us on social media. On Facebook, we have a Facebook page called Scoppy Magazine. We also have a Facebook group called Sounding Board, which Daniel Ryan is a part of. I added you to there. We love it. It's fun. We talk about local arts and politics. Andrea shared the Klingon Don't Stop Believing today, which is just...
so good!
Thank you.
It's a gift.
Yeah, so check that out. Otherwise, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr under Scoppy Mag, and you can also find our podcast, the one you're listening to right now, under Scoppy Radio on most podcast places.
And I'm here to talk about the importance of subscribing. If you head to our website, scoppymag.com, and go to our subscribe page, there are a couple ways that you can do that. The first is to sign up for email blasts that will let you know every time we post something. This is huge, because even though we post across social media platforms, Facebook eats our shit. So if you want to see 100% of what we're doing and not just 30% of it, I encourage you to sign up for those email blasts. The other thing that you can do is to become a member. At $5 a month, you're going to get a pin that says go out and make something. And at $10 a month, you're going to be on the RSVP list for our upcoming house concert series, Scoppy Studio. We need 9 more people to sign up at that level so that we can pay our fucking artists. So if you want to help us out with that, it would be amazing. And you'll see some really cool shit. And if you're interested in advertising, please feel free to reach out to us at scoppymag@gmail.com. So give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.